Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us here on the telephone lines, staying busy, and we timed this out perfectly before the third game of the day gets underway. Sean Powell was able to watch the Nets and the Sixers and then the Spurs and the Nuggets and then hop aboard and give us some a couple of minutes of insight here from NBA.com. Sean Powell joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. First two games today, on a scale of 1 to 10, each of them from an excitement level status, what would you grade each of the two games played today, Sean?
Well, the first one is 9+. I mean, what else would you want with the Brooklyn Nets and the Sixers? You know, you had high intensity, a close finish, ejection, high emotions, and big-time shots. As far as the Nuggets and the Spurs, I mean, I expected a little bit more, especially given how the series has played out. And plus, since the Nuggets, they haven't before this in San Antonio in like 14 straight times. So a little deflating at the end, but nonetheless, you know, still decent basketball.
Understood on both and agree with your evaluation on both. Let's go back to the early game first. As you mentioned, there were ejections in the game. There's been some pretty good trash talking going on between Jared Dudley and Ben Simmons throughout the series, and it escalated today, not necessarily. There was some back and forth between Simmons and Dudley, but what eventually ended to the ejections was Jared Dudley pushing Joel Embiid after a hard foul on Jared Allen, and then Jimmy Butler jumps in and trying to defend his teammate, pushes Dudley into the stands. No punches thrown. Some serious physicality. They decided to toss both players. Did the referees handle that situation correctly?
You know, I'm hearing from a lot of people how they love the intensity and the trash talking between Dudley. You have Russell Westbrook and Damian Lillard and Patrick Beverley and KD, and that's all well and good. But because you have that, and the referees know that going into games, they're going to call the games tight. And anytime they see some extra chatter or maybe a little bit more physical stuff, they're going to be hypersensitive to that. So therefore, if you're going to be a smart player, if you're going to talk all that mess and everything, okay, that's fine. But you have to be smart enough not to overreact when it comes time to play basketball, because you know the officials are going to be hypersensitive. And I think in this situation, yeah, other than the fact that it went into the crowd, okay, and that's why they got suspended, I don't think what they did was particularly wrong. Again, you know, the referees are on heightened alert. We don't want, you know, throwback basketball where guys are throwing punches and things like that. I don't think that that would be good for fans. I don't think it would be good for the TV networks, and it won't be good for the teams.
I hadn't even thought along those lines, that the referees might be even more sensitive to potential ejections and the like, because it's elevated pregame with the verbal bars going back and forth. The way you stated it, it actually swung my belief. I thought that it was an overreaction by the referees. I didn't think it merited players getting tossed out, but you're right. Butler wasn't part of the trash talking, but he responded to it, and he was the guy who got eventually kicked out for the Sixers. Sixers were able to overcome that, and Embiid made a couple of plays late. His ever-changing status is both tough on Sixer fans and frustrating for Sixer fans, but he made some big plays late, including saving one ball to Mike Scott, who made the biggest shot of the game at three. And then Jared Allen gets, I thought, bounced around in the lane. There was a lot of contact. They triple-teamed him. Ben Simmons eventually came up with the strip and the steal. Did you think there was enough foul there to be enough contact to be called a foul?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, the game goes so fast, Jody Mack. I mean, you know, sometimes it's easy for us to sit back at home and, you know, we see replays and things like that, and it's easy for us to play armchair referee. But you're talking about the world's greatest athletes, fast in the lane, I don't really know. I do feel that when Joel Embiid swiped the ball away from Jared Allen, that was a clean swipe. I mean, I didn't see anything malicious in that. It's almost like because the way Jared Allen reacted, he fell down, and because of the way his teammates reacted, that the referee was quick with the whistle. I don't see why Joel Embiid got a flagrant. That's not a flagrant foul. He got all ball. I mean, I don't see it. But everything that happened after that, again, as I said, the referees are on heightened alert. Joel Embiid has been saying things, you've got players, back and forth. You got Jimmy Butler there. So, again, they want to restore order as quickly as possible. And if that means giving guys technicals and maybe even tossing guys, so be it.
Are the Nets going to roll over in game number 5?
Oh, I don't think they're going to roll over. I mean, this team has sunk. And if you've seen them all year, that team shows up in place. You've got young players who really don't have a lot of playoff experience, but you would never know. I mean, they play hard. They go right at it. They don't have too many lapses. That's a credit, obviously, to the coaching staff at Kenny Atkinson, but also a credit to the players. I mean, these young players are hungry. They want notice, and eventually they're going to want money. Like D'Angelo Russell, he wants to get paid this summer. When you throw that all into the mix, the Brooklyn Nets show up, and I think it's going to be a very, very tough game for the Sixers to win. It doesn't matter that it's in Philadelphia. It's going to be a tough game for the Sixers to win.
Jordan Powell, NBA.com, here with us on CBS Sports Radio. All right, if the Sixers win another hard-fought down to the wire, find a way to win it, or just better talent comes to the fore in the last couple minutes of the game, and they end up winning it in 5, but every game hotly contested, will you feel the same as you did, better about the Sixers' chances for the second round and beyond, or not as good?
Everything, that pendulum swings based on Joel Embiid's health. I mean, for him to miss the playoff game, and I get it, it's against the Nets and all that. Still, whenever you see a player check out of a playoff series, even for a game, that gives you reason for pause. And he's not going to be able to skip a game the next round. And even around after that, if they're lucky to make it that far. Every game from here on for Joel Embiid is you've got to play. Obviously, if you're healthy, if you're not healthy, you can't play. And if he can't play, I think that casts doubt on the Sixers because, again, every opponent now is going to be very, very good. And the Sixers cannot win without Joel Embiid in the next series.
All right, so if the Sixers advance, the Raptors are now up 2-1 over Orlando. They got the big upset in game number 1, but the Raptors certainly responded in game 2 and found a way to win in game number 3. Is that series going to go any more than 5?
I don't think so. I give Orlando credit for scrambling near the end of the regular season and making the playoffs. Steve Clifford and staff done a good job. Aaron Gordon playing good, played good basketball this year. That team is missing, I think, a superstar. I like Nikola Vucevic, but he doesn't really qualify. No offense to him. There are only maybe 10 players in this league who are true superstars, and Orlando doesn't have one. I also think for Orlando, everything from here is just pretty much icing on the cake. I mean, they're playing with house money. They're not expected to go very far. They're certainly not going to get beyond Toronto. And I look for Toronto to close it out.
All right. Toronto beat Philly 3 times during the season, and the only win that the Sixers had, Kawhi didn't play, Serge Ibaka didn't play. They were missing at least one other guy. I don't remember who it was. And I watched all 4 of those games, and Toronto not only won, they won handily in the 3 that they won. Are they a major favorite over the Sixers? This was before Tobias Harris came aboard. What kind of shot do you give Philly against Toronto in the next round?
Well, let's have this discussion assuming that Joel Embiid's health holds up and he's an impact player.
Yes.
And I say it's a toss-up. I really don't put too much stock in what happened in the regular season because in the regular season you have to take a lot of factors into play. Was it the back-to-back game? Were they missing players? Was it early in the season before you know, those teams caught stride, you know, before the Sixers made the trade to get Tobias Harris. So a lot of factors come into play as far as the regular season. I think if both teams are healthy, I do think it's a toss-up. I would say that the four teams in the East, you know, those two, you know, along with Milwaukee and who am I missing out on? Boston.
Boston. Stop really, 3-0.
Yeah, the Celtics, those four. You know, it's really a toss-up. I would not be surprised if any of those four, you know, gets to the NBA Finals. It's that tight between. I don't care that Milwaukee, you know, had the best record in the NBA. If all these teams are healthy and they're clicking, I could see, you know, either of the four making the Finals.
You just finished saying that you don't put much stock into what happened between two teams during the regular season, so I'll ask you about the postseason. Last year, Boston and Milwaukee played in the postseason. It was the two-ranked Celtics against the seventh-seeded Bucks. This year, it would be the top-seeded Bucks against the fourth-seeded Celtics. Does last year's playoff series between Boston and Milwaukee have any effect on a potential playoff series between them this year?
You know, that's an interesting question you have there, Jody, Matt, because last year, you know, Giannis was not as good as he's going to be this year. Also, last year, you know, you had Celtics really missing two rotational, two starters with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, and they flourished. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals, came a game away from going to the NBA Finals, but we haven't seen that Celtics team at least consistently this year. And of the four teams, I would probably hedge my bet a little bit on them, because they're just Jekyll Hyde personality when it comes to playing basketball that you really don't see with Toronto or Philadelphia. Well, Philadelphia a little bit, but you really don't see as much with Toronto, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. So, you know, again, we're just assuming, we're talking here assuming that all four teams are on top of their game. You know, I think still that's a tough matchup. Milwaukee obviously would have the best player on the floor, but maybe Boston has the next four players if you're, you know, throwing them all together. You know, it could come down to a turnover, you know, a missed free throw, just something quirky that could give another team an advantage and send them on to the next round.
Let's quick jump over to the Western Conference with Sean Powell from NBA.com. Here with us on CBS Sports Radio. You gave us your take on San Antonio and Denver. Golden State, after losing the huge lead and blowing game two, came back and kind of restated the fact that they're the team to beat in game number three. What did the Clips have to do to get this series 2-2 in game four? Anything, or was the game two victory a thing they'll be able to hang their hat on, but about all they're going to be able to walk away with from this series?
Well, Jody Mack, this is a series I'm covering now. I'm in Los Angeles for, you know, for game.
Okay.
The next game. And, you know, if you put aside the how the Warriors relaxed, yeah, I guess that's easy to say. I mean, it was historic how they collapsed. The Warriors have owned the series, as you probably would expect them to own it. I mean, it really hasn't been all that close. And if I might even add, if the Warriors haven't been as sloppy with the ball pretty much throughout the series, I mean, you know, these games are over at halftime. I think the Clippers are, again, they're playing with house money. They won 48 games this year. They traded Tobias Harris's trade deadline. They don't really have a true superstar, but the players and coaches have done a great job getting to this point. And I think if nothing else, the Clippers are kind of trying to impress a free agent. Someone who's going to be a free agent next summer. I'm not talking about a mid-level. I'm talking about a great free agent. They're trying to impress them, you know, in this series, so they can sign that player who can beat Golden State next year. Might that player be Kevin Durant? I don't know. Is it going to be Kawhi Leonard? We'll see. But I think the Clippers right now, the Clippers this summer is much, much more important than anything that could happen on Sunday in the next game against the Warriors.
Fair enough. Oklahoma City wins last night to get that series to 2-1, make it competitive. Had they lost down 3-0, might have been too big a hole to get out of. Somebody's got to lose that series, either Portland or Oklahoma City. Will the loser and bounced in the first round team make drastic changes this offseason?
I don't see how Portland can make any drastic changes because it's pretty much locked in for at least another year. They signed a bunch of players back in 2016 to rich contracts, and none of those players have really made a difference. But those contracts don't come off the books until the summer of 2020. And I'd say the same thing with Oklahoma City. They're kind of locked in. They've got some, you know, Russ Westbrook's making big money, and so is Paul George. So from a salary cap standpoint, it'd be very tough for either of those two teams to make major changes. But when I look at this series, you know, Jody Mack, I'm looking at the interplay between, you know, Damian Lillard and Russell Westbrook. To me, that's about as interesting of a matchup as you're going to get in these playoffs. I mean, these guys are going at each other. They don't particularly like each other, at least on the floor. I don't know what they're like, you know, away from the game. And you can just see it. There just seems to be an extra intensity when they're going up against each other. And with the exception of Westbrook, I think it was game three when he just didn't shoot well. I mean, they've also played very well. So I'm looking at the matchup more than I'm looking at the games itself.
Both played very well last night, and there is a major intensity there. You are correct. All right, last thing, and this is away from this year's playoffs and everything else, turning the page a little bit. Don't know how many times you have had a chance to interview him one-on-one, off the record. Your relationship with Kevin Durant, if you could give me your best speculation, the number one thing that will motivate Kevin Durant when he makes his off-season decision as to where he's going to be playing next year, what's the number one thing that he relies on?
Man, that's a loaded question. I wish I had the answer to that. He's a very complex person, particularly when it comes to this. First of all, you would think money, but the guy has made a lot of money off the course. He's going to get a big contract no matter where it goes this summer, so I don't think it's about money. He's already made a ton of money. Winning, well, I'm sure that's up there, but if it was all about winning, he would have already said, hey, I'm going to re-sign with the Golden State Warriors, right, Bobby? I mean, you know, I mean, if this team stays together, they're going to be favored for next year's title, too.
Yep.
So there must be something else compelling with Kevin Durant, something else that he's searching for that he really hasn't allowed anyone to see. My gut feeling is that if they win another championship, he's got three in a bag, and I think then he says, you know what, I want to go to a team that I can make my own, that I can mold my own. You know, a team like the Clippers, okay, that – if you win a championship, be the first person to win a championship with the Clippers. Or go to the Knicks, be the first person in almost three decades to win a championship with Knicks. I can see him embarking on that search where he goes to a place and he says to himself, man, if I just win that championship here, I'll never buy another meal in this town.
Shawnee, good stuff. Give us some good insight there at the end. You and I are on the same page. If he wins a championship, then I think it truly lessens his chance to go back to Golden State and does open it up for everybody else. Thanks for hopping on board. We'll let you get to watching the Bucks and the Pistons. We'll talk to you again later in the playoffs. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, man. We'll see you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.